Hello again. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday, the 9th of March. Yesterday marked the 100th anniversary of International Women's Day. And as you probably know, the White House had a celebration yesterday, and our guest this hour, Ellen Bravo, was at that celebration. This also coupled with a release on Friday from the World Economic Forum, a major report finding that despite increasing awareness of gender disparities in the workplace, women at many of the world's top companies continue to lag behind their male peers in many areas, including pay and opportunities for professional advancement. And many companies have yet to implement policies to address these gaps, despite a significant amount of pressure from many of their governments to do so. The survey was of 600 heads of human resources offices at the largest employers in 20 countries, representing 16 different industries. Ellen Bravo is with us this hour. Ellen has been working for many years, a longtime activist for working women. She began working and made quite a name for herself for 9 to 5, the National Association of Working Women. She started there in 1982. She helped found the Milwaukee chapter and served until 2004 as the national director. She now teaches women's studies at the University of Wisconsin, Milwaukee, including master's level classes on family-friendly workplaces and on sexual harassment, and she serves as a consultant to 9 to 5. She is the author of Taking on the Big Boys, Why Feminism is Good for Families, Business, and the Nation, and she is executive director of the Family Values at Work Consortium. We're going to be welcoming phone calls for Ellen during the course of the hour. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email address is talk@wpr.org. Hello, Ellen. How are you?
I'm terrific. Thanks. Good to talk to you. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. Great to talk to you. So you were at the White House yesterday.
I was. It was really fun. It was, you know, about 150 women leaders from around, mostly in D.C., but a number of people were there from other places. Like, I stood in line to get in next to a woman from Mujer Obrera in El Paso, Texas, a group that I've known for years, and but I had never met her in person. It was really fun. And my favorite thing about the day, so Michelle Obama and Barack Obama both addressed the group. Kerry Washington, the actress, if you know who she is, was the MC.
Yes.
And so it starts out with Michelle Obama saying, you know, I love these kind of events because I get to speak first. And then she turns to the president and says, gaze at me adoringly. And the Milwaukee Journal had a picture of it, but they had the wrong quote. They said, gaze at me sincerely. But she did say that. And then when he got up to speak, he said, you know, it's not a task to gaze at you adoringly. And he said, and, you know, he talked about the history of women in this country and the inequalities, and mentioned several key facts like the pay gap, that 1 in 4 women experience domestic violence at some point in their lives, that only 17% of Congress and fewer than 3% of the CEOs of Fortune 500 companies are women. And he said the history in this country, whether it's starting with women in the Mayflower or people like the woman I'm blessed to call my wife, they sit and look at, they sit across the table and look at us and say, I'm smarter than him. It was very sweet.
Oh, so, I'm glad you were there. That's quite
the great thing, though, is not just that they have this kind of celebration, but what they're doing. And so, for example, he referred to the fact that they've included in the budget a huge amount of increase for child care and elder care support for families, and also $50 million, which we hope will stay there, to help states start family leave insurance funds. This means that when you have a baby, it doesn't have to be a trigger for poverty, that you could actually draw on an insurance pool that you'd have helped pay a modest amount into so that you could have some income while you were out on leave, and not just women but men, and not just for babies but also to care for, you know, unfortunately, we all have those incidents of having to care for a parent who's ill or sometimes a seriously ill child or spouse. So these are great steps. You know, our groups, the network I work with, Family Values at Work, works with 14 state coalitions that are fighting for things like paid sick days and paid family leave. And Mrs. Obama made a DVD, Greetings, that folks are using in special events they're having. There's going to be one here in Milwaukee in April. And in it, she says, you know, it's simply unacceptable that having a sick child or being sick yourself is a fireable offense. And it's unacceptable that we have hospitals, hallways lined with seniors because their adult children can't get a little flexibility to come and pick them up.
Mm-hmm.
And that we, you know, that having a baby can be a cause of a downward spiral economically. We can do better than that. Many companies already do. We know what it looks like. We know that it works. But we have to make sure there's a, you know, some minimum standard so that everybody gets to benefit. So that's what's exciting about having finally some, you know, administration that supports these kinds of initiatives.
Yeah. Both of us have some years on us now and have been talking about these issues. You've been working on these issues for a long time. When you bring up, I think about all the programs done on childcare at the workplace and making workplaces more family friendly and dealing with some of the issues that you just talked about. It's so hard for women because we do the elder care and we do, when our children get sick, face the possibility of, you know, losing our jobs. I'm wondering, I guess we can say now that there's been some history on all of this, Ellen. Are things better for all of us now? Some of the issues have just sort of escaped from the forefront of our attention.
Yeah. So, you know, I was thinking about this. I remember 9 to 5 having a ceremony to support companies that had on-site childcare.
Yes, right.
In the mid-80s. Mm. And if we did that, if someone did that same ceremony today, it wouldn't look very different.
Mm-hmm.
It's still only 7% of, well, it's 5% of larger companies that have on-site childcare, and, you know, surely we can do better than that. And, you know, I appreciate a lot of employers are struggling themselves, so what we need is ways of, this is, as we have it, a lose-lose. Parents can't afford what they're paying. Childcare providers often live near poverty themselves. And so you have this high turnover because people just can't afford to do a job they love. This is one of the few jobs that you can have a BA and still be a low-wage worker. We have to find a better way to do that. Many countries have. They use public support to help families pay for childcare in the same way that, you know, we didn't always think of public education as public and free, and we didn't always start at age 5 or 4. It could start even younger. In some countries, it starts at 2.5. In France, for example, daycare from 2.5 up is free, and it's high quality, and being a childcare worker is a good job.
Isn't that something?
It's got status and pay and training, and 98% of the population use those centers, even if someone's home during the day, because it's so good for the development of the children.
Mm-hmm.
And then they have a sliding scale for infants and toddlers until the age of 2.5. We could do that. And, you know, sometimes people will call into a show like yours and say, well, I don't have kids anymore and I don't want my tax money going to this. And I always say, I appreciate that you're worried about where your tax money goes. Let's talk about that. Let's talk about how much money goes to corporate welfare. You know, 7.5% of the gross domestic product goes to things like giving $2 million to McDonald's to market McNuggets in China.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, if they want to market them, let them, but why should we pay for it? And there's a whole book called Get the Rich Off Welfare, if you want, people want more examples. So there it's not about raising taxes, it's about changing what now exists as either corporate welfare or loopholes. And, you know, make it possible for us to have a sustainable set of public structures without straining the budgets of, you know, families.
Let's look at some of the specifics, Ellen, of the report from the World Economic Forum, which was released last Friday, finding, despite increasing awareness of gender disparities in the workplace, women at many of the world's top companies lagging behind male peers, including pay and opportunities for professional advancement. They also looked at benefits like paid family leave to promote work balance for their employees. What the heck's going on with this pay gap still? We've been on this issue for a long time. Why is there still a significant pay gap? And it's not just in this country. It's worse in some other parts of the world and better in some parts of the world. But why does it persist?
Well, you know, I'll tell you that this is a secret. A group of the best researchers in the country got together to figure this out. And they used all these scientific analysis, multiple regression analysis, et cetera. And they figured out, and someone was there who told me, and so I'll tell you, here's the secret. The reason women earn so little money is their employers pay them so little money.
Oh.
And the reason they do is that they can, and often think they have to in order to compete. So there's several things. The key, the most significant, without which we won't end this, is the undervaluation of women's work.
Mm-hmm.
It used to be perfectly legal to pay women half to two-thirds as much, and many people, in fact, that's why they hired them, found they could do fill-in-the-blank jobs, secretary, things they had been prohibited to do, bank teller, et cetera. More and more women did those jobs. They became women-dominated jobs. The Equal Pay Law was passed in 1963. All it says is women and men who do the same job for the same company have to get the same pay. Most women and men don't do the same jobs, and the jobs women do pay less.
Mm-hmm.
And then we don't value jobs that women do in the home when they do them in the marketplace. So all the caregiving jobs, this is why the people who take care of young children make less than the people who take care of our pets, our lawns, our cars, et cetera. So we have to revalue women's work. We have to take that bias out of compensation. That's a key thing. And then all the other things that contribute to the work-family issues, you know, there was this very interesting research done about they sent resumes that look identical, except there's something that lets you know the person is a parent in some of them. And, you know, maybe in the community involvement, it'll mention PTA or something. For the women who were seen as mothers, they were much less likely to get called in for an interview, much less likely to get hired, and when they were hired, they were offered $11,000 less on average. This is studied done by Shelley Correll at Cornell University, if people want to look it up. Men who were seen as fathers generally got a boost because, you know, being a father is seen as being more stable. Being a mother is seen as being less stable and less competent. Except there are other studies that show that when men act like women about caregiving, meaning that they try to structure their work in regard to their family responsibilities, they get discriminated against as well.
Mm-hmm. What about when you look at, I know this study did not look at women in the public sector or in education. Do we see a significant, and have there been studies done of this, so we see a significant difference, maybe more equality here? Or
I'll tell you where we see more equality. We do see it more in the public sector, but the main reason is that is two things. One, they're unionized. They tend to be unionized, and the pay gap is much smaller for women in unions, and the pay rate for women is much higher. A second reason is that the basis for pay is clearer and more transparent, generally, not always, in public sector. This is a huge problem in the private sector. There was a study done by there's a group called Catalyst that looks at professional women. And they did a study called about the pipeline. So they were looking at MBAs right out of their degree program, men and women entering similar jobs. And they found that the men made $4,600 more in year one. They were more likely to get promoted. They were more likely to get better assignments. And once that happens, it sets the pace for the entire life. Think about how many times you've been asked, how much did you make at your last job?
Mm-hmm.
And how often pay raises are percentage. So the gap just grows. You know, one of the things that's very interesting is that the gap is highest for women at the top and women with the most education And, of course, the biggest gap is for mothers, and particularly single mothers.
Ellen Bravo is our guest. We're going to welcome phone calls for her. Ellen is, she has just a long history of working for women. She's executive director of the Family Values at Work Consortium, adjunct assistant professor at the Center for Women's Studies at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. For many years, she was working with the National Association of Working Women, 9 to 5. She helped found the Milwaukee chapter, worked tirelessly, and has been a national spokesperson for her work in that area. She served until 2004 as its national director. Well, and she's also author of Taking on the Big Boys, Why Feminism is Good for Families, Business, and the Nation. You know, it's been some time since we've talked about these kinds of issues. Yesterday, as we said, was the 100th anniversary of International Women's Day, and we're looking at a report that came out. It's a world report from the World Economic Forum on Friday of last week. Actually, the report released yesterday. Following the announcement on Friday by European Union initiative aimed at reducing the 18% gender wage gap in those countries, which has really changed very little in the last 15 years. The report found that despite the fact that we're much more aware of gender disparities in the workplace, that women, particularly in top companies, are lagging behind their male peers in many, many areas. And Ellen was also at that White House event yesterday with 150 prominent women, the president and Michelle Obama. Our phone number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Do you think that we've reached a point of equality? Tell us about what your struggles have been. What about this whole issue of children? I still think it is such a huge issue in terms of when children are sick and whether or not you have good child care. It's an issue that has been with us for years and years and years. And I wonder what happened to all those terrific daycare programs we're going to see in companies all over this country and others. I guess they have them in others, but not enough here yet. We'll welcome your phone calls in a moment. Rhonda Fanning is doing on-air production. Chat with Rhonda. We'll be with you on the air and with Ellen in just a moment here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Ellen Bravo is our guest. Our number is 800-486-8655, and we start our calls with Sandy. Hi, Sandy.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm just calling. I'm sitting here in my living room on my computer, actually, as I'm listening to your program, trying to find a job. I'm a mother returning to the workplace, and it's depressing enough in this economy trying to find a job. I've sent out my resume probably, in the past month, 60, 70 times, got no response, and then to hear how mothers don't get the same equality, it almost is more depressing.
And you know, the best practice companies and the smartest researchers show the skills, relational skills, time management skills, and other important things that people learn from parenting. And that these are assets to bring, and often people are made to feel like they, quote, haven't worked when they've spent some time out of the workforce taking care of kids, when, of course, they've worked hard, they just haven't been paid. And there are real advantages, the way to describe those skills. But, there are websites that can help you. If the issue is a gap in employment, there are ways you can take advantage and show other contributions you've made. For example, whether it was in a congregation or a nonprofit or a school, ways you've helped network, raise money, any professional association things you've done, ways to answer questions in an interview. We want to get to the point, and we all have to work together to change the way it is now, where these are assets, not liabilities, and where we don't have to explain ourselves, where, people welcome that.
Right.
And there are, as I said, some best practice companies that do. I feel for you because I know how hard this economy is and how many people are scrambling to find work you know, we really have to make an investment in jobs and increase hiring. We'll never get out of this mess if we don't. But I also know that the kind of policies that we are fighting for, things like paid sick days or making family leave affordable or ending pay inequality, these are also ways of improving employers' bottom line. It's not a favor to women to do this. It's a way of having a more attached, long-term, retaining workers, attracting good workers, and it saves a lot of money in turnover costs for employers to implement these kinds of standards. And, you know, I think anyone who's familiar with the way companies operate know that when you have a diversity of views, you do a better job in your outreach, in your marketing, in your relations with clients or customers, whatever it is.
I'm thinking about Sandy in front of that computer. Ellen, can you direct her to a website or a book, or I want her day to go better?
I've got a lot of websites I go to. And
do you?
Yeah. It's kind of like, I'm listening to her. It's kind of like I feel like after being a mother and learning so much in my mothering, I feel like I'm a better opportunity. I should present a better opportunity to companies to employ me, to hire me, that I've learned so much in these years as a mother, yet I feel like I'm looked at as less than I was when I left the workplace.
Yes, I completely understand, and it shouldn't be. And like I said, I'm sure that you have found websites that are helpful about taking a good look at your resume and, you know, ways of describing your skills and experience without listing chronological employment, so that the first thing they look at isn't that fact that you've been out for a while, but rather the kind of expertise and commitment that you bring.
Yes. Thank you, Sandy. Good luck to you. It is true that there is nothing like being a parent, Ellen. We know that, don't we? It's just all encompassing. You learn about all aspects of life.
Absolutely. And, you know, including keeping a sense of humor. And I remember one of my sons when he was about 15 and I was chewing him out for something, and you know, he let me do my whole little rant, and then he said, "You know, Mom, you have a big clump of carrot in your teeth. It's a little hard to take you seriously." And boy, it keeps you humble and, you know, on your toes. Raising
good.
Kids.
Actually, I'll use that in reverse with my 17-year-old.
Yeah,
I like
go. But,
that
you know,
one.
The other thing that having kids does is it helps you be in tune with what real people need. And I was just having this conversation yesterday with someone who's done work on work and family for many years. She heads up something called the Families and Work Institute. And what both of us were saying that's so interesting, that's been shown over and over again, that the top decision makers, when they think their world is the world and their world is, you know, having a partner at home full time who takes care of all the stuff of life, they're much less aware of what their employees' lives are like. Whereas when they run into it themselves, maybe through a wife or a daughter or a daughter-in-law or their own caring for an elderly parent, it's like the light goes off and they're like, oh, I see, we have to look at this differently. Different things trigger the awareness, but above all, I think when we help identify the ones who are doing it right and show that it works, and then encourage people to stand up and say, we all need that, and we're going to stop seeing this as a personal struggle. It's not just me who can't find a job, or it's not just me who's being looked down on in this way. We have to band together and make these changes come about.
Thanks, Sandy, for the call. Mike from Milwaukee is next. Hi, Mike.
Good morning.
Hello.
You know, I really appreciate Ms. Bravo's presence. You know, so many, I don't want to say this, telling my age and anybody else's, but she's been around so long and it's so good that she's still persistent. I just love that. So, I wanted to ask you if you could put some historical perspective on this. I remember reading, quite a while ago, Sojourner's Truth's, speech, Ain't I a Woman?
Yes.
And, you know, so many generations have come and gone, and so many battles have been fought, and it's across the board, whether it's labor or whether it's, you know, anything has to do with human issues like this. Why does it take so long? I mean, we're fighting a war in Afghanistan, and my only reason for having approval of that is that is to stop the acid being thrown in girls' faces for going to school. And we're fighting a war there to bring rights to, for women. And but here in this country, we still practice a lot of that. And what is the opposition? Who are we fighting against to get equal rights? What's going on?
So I just have to say myself, I don't support the war in Afghanistan. But you know, I feel that there are many women's groups there who are seeing horrible suffering for families and civilians as a result of the war, and who obviously care about the oppression of women, but don't think this is the best way to do it. And I hope our government will see that as well. Who are we fighting against? You know, the reason I called my book Taking on the Big Boys is the majority of men obviously don't benefit from women's lower pay or when women get fired for having a sick kid. That's their family members, and they suffer as well. It's really a small number of people who benefit, and I think we've learned from the financial blow-up that we're experiencing still the fallout from, that there are some people who run companies in a way that doesn't even really look at the best interest of that company. It looks at the best short-term interests of their own profits, and that we need to change that. We need to say you can't get away with making companies too big to fail and getting golden parachutes and getting huge bonuses. And, you know, I do this exercise with my students where I say, think of the blackboard as a year calendar, with one end being January 2nd, 9 o'clock, first hour of the work day of the new year, and the end being December 31st. And at the end, a minimum wage earner has earned, you know, $14,800. At what point in the calendar does the average CEO earn that much? And, you know, they'll call out various dates in March and February, sometimes in January. It turns out it's 11:40 on January 2nd.
Oh, my.
You know, it's just appalling. So there are ways that we can change that structure so that we're not under the thumb of these certain powerful interests. And, you know, one of the ways we have to do that is to get money out of politics. I think lots of us know this, that lobbyists are calling the shots and have too much access, literally write bills in some cases. You know, that has to end. And it has to be that it's the people who are listened to. And the way we do that is by building a movement strong enough that we can be heard and have to be heard. And that's what many of us are trying to do.
Thanks very much for the call, Mike. Is there a country that's sort of the guiding light here? This Finland keeps popping out at me when I look at some of the details of this study, that they have the largest proportion of female chief executives, still not very high, but 13%. And also the daycare program, health care, et cetera. Are there countries that have just found it much easier for some reason that you want to tell us about?
Well, most countries, first of all, we should just say that, for example, I'm sure you know that we're one of four countries, along with Swaziland, Liberia, and Papua New Guinea, who don't have paid family leave. Mm-hmm. One of four. Everybody else does, including very poor and underdeveloped countries, and for a long period of time. And the majority of rich and developed and competitive countries have, not only do they all have paid sick days, but most of them have 30 days or more. And there's a book out that's by a woman named Jody, H-E-Y-M-A-N-N, Hyman, who has shown that this has not only not hurt them, but has helped them economically. So having these kinds of policies, particularly countries like Finland and Norway and Sweden and Denmark, have policies that require men to use part of the family's family leave. If they don't use it, the family loses it. So there's a real incentive.
Really?
Yes.
Huh.
So in Sweden, for example, it's 3 months, and they're talking about making it 6 months, of a little over a year leave that men must use, or else the family has a shorter break, a shorter time leave. And it's changing the way men relate to their family, not just when they're babies, but throughout. That's what's really exciting. And we also know that, you know, unions are more significant in many other countries, and that's helped raise wages. We know that the inequality is less between the top and the rest of the country in many other countries, and that really helps. So, you know, having strong, independent movements having minimum labor standards that make it possible for people to combine being, you know, caregivers and being good workers. These are some key elements. And then, you know, we have to, when you asked before why women earn so little money, one other big problem in our country is that women are more likely to be part-time workers, and there's no law that says you have to pay part-timers the same base rate as full-timers. I may work part-time, but I work full-time every hour I'm on the job. I should get the same base rate, and I should get at least prorated benefits. That's something that we need to address. And, you know, there are ways of rooting, if we fix these work-family things, if we fix these inequalities, if we remove race and gender as basis of compensation, and if we change the corporate culture, this is probably one of the more intangible, difficult things.
Yes.
But I don't have to go to other countries. There are companies here. I'll tell you one of my favorite. It's a software company in North Carolina called SAS Software. They have a 35-hour work week. No one works more than 45 hours, even the CEO. They've been called the sanest company on earth. And guess what? Their turnover rate, and people don't take work home at night because the CEO believes that relaxed workers are more productive. Their turnover rate is 3% in an industry where it's more than 20%, and they have figured out it saves them $67 million a year, $67 million a year. They have 4 on-site child care centers, and they have an on-site health care, and people work collaboratively. There aren't huge gaps in pay. Everybody on a team who writes a software package signs their names on it. They have relations with the customers. If you're on leave, they call me because they know all 3 or 4 of us, whatever. So it's a really it's a very smart way to work, and they have never had a down year. We're not asking people to, you know, we don't want to hurt business because businesses create jobs. We want fair businesses, and we believe that you can do well and do good at the same time.
Right.
There are a number of businesses who are aligned to say that.
And have happy workers. Nothing wrong with that.
Exactly.
Yeah. Thanks, Joyce, very much for your... Oh, darn, Joyce, I just said goodbye to you, and I'm so sorry. Please call back, Joyce. I pressed the wrong darn button. 800-486-8655 is our number. 800-486-8655. Ellen Bravo, our guest. Erin is next from Richmond. Hi, Erin.
Hi. Thank you for taking my
call.
Sure. And I'm a registered nurse, and I graduated 15 years ago. When I was in school, there was a form on the wall in our nursing department that listed various careers and how many percent of women were in those careers versus how many men. And what was interesting is nursing, 95% of the nurses are women and 5% were men. But then it also listed the incomes, the annual incomes, and the 5% of men who were in nursing careers made more money on average than those 95% of women.
That's true for secretaries. It's true for all the fields that are predominantly female. Almost without exception, men in those fields make more, and a lot of that has to do with both bias against women, particularly against mothers, and, you know, the lack of... You take a field like lawyer, you know, law or physicians, for example. There women are almost half of medical students now, and yet women's physicians' pay is 64.4% of men physicians' pay.
Isn't that astounding?
There's a group called Institute for Women's Policy Research, IWPR.org, and they have the 2009 comparisons of occupations, women and men, and you'll see these numbers. Now, why is that? Some of it has to do with the fields women are in. You know, women are more likely to be in family practice than in urology, for example, or more likely to be in family law. But why are those paid less? They are. Women are much more likely to reach partner or heads of the clinic or whatever it is. And I remember once, you know, sometimes I'll get invited to speak to, like, the Women Physicians Association or some group like that. And in that case, the women were saying to me, you either have to give up your ambition or you don't have kids, or you only have one.
Mm-hmm.
You can't do both. And one of them said to me, you know, when my I missed my daughter's high school graduation because I was delivering a baby. And if that were your baby, she said, you'd have wanted me there. Mm-hmm. I said, you know, you're absolutely right. When I had my kids, I certainly wanted a doctor I knew. But, you know, there could be two or three of you, and I could know all of you, and all of you could know about me. And whichever one of you didn't have a daughter graduating high school when I went into labor would deliver my baby. We could have a different model. That's why I always talk about it's not just about smashing the glass ceiling. It's redesigning the building from the bottom up, having a new way of working together. If we don't change the way we work, we can't just have a slap on a policy here or there and think it will do it.
And did those women physicians have, because we tend to think that they are, even though there's a huge pay gap, which is horrendous, but we think of them as being better paid than most of us are. Did they have child care concerns as well, or did their hospitals, medical clinics, et cetera, were they more advanced in thinking that, well, these women's children need to be taken care of?
Actually, some hospitals are better as an industry, I think, in creating child care. The problem is you don't just want to know your kid is in a good child care. You also want to see them. You want to have time to spend with them. So, you know, I know of places, for example, that get on the best places to work list where somebody will take me aside and say, yeah, we have an on-site child care center, and we also have mandatory overtime. And when I told them I couldn't stay because my mother was in the hospital, my manager said, well, how long is this thing with your mother going to last?
Oh, my goodness.
So, you know, we have a lot of work to do. But the good news is we know what it looks like. And I think we know how to build the movement to get there. And we just need all of us to say, I will no longer accept being told this is my problem or about some deficiency in me. We need new standards, and we can work together to get them.
Thanks, Erin, for the call. Joyce, thank you. I'm so sorry I hung up on you. I didn't mean to, and I'm glad you called back. Hi.
Thank you.
Sure.
You've discussed a lot of what I was going to say. Let me say that I'm in my 70s now, and so I've experienced all kinds, and I was in science, and so it was difficult, okay? But I really thought that my daughter, who became an attorney and was very successful, she's an attorney at one of the largest environmental law firms in the nation, and I thought, oh, that's wonderful. My daughter got past all that. And then I found out when she decided to have a child, she's not married, but she decided to have a child. And everybody in the firm was really, oh, this is wonderful. I visited. And they told me how wonderful, how glad they were for her that she was going to have this baby. The only problem was when she took her leave, which she legally had and the firm provided, okay, she gave her cases to other attorneys. She had to fight for every one of them when she went back after. She only took, I think, 6 weeks, maybe 10 weeks. Mm. But when she got back, she has never been treated the same.
How recently was this?
This was, my grandson is 3 years old.
I wish it were more recent, because I would send you to someone who could help. Mm. Because there's something called family responsibility discrimination. And when you are treated differently, this is based on gender stereotypes that being a mother somehow lowers your competence or commitment. You know, as somebody said, I had a lobotomy. I mean, I had a baby, not a lobotomy. You know, I'm just fine.
Right.
And there are people who are successfully suing, and there are now guidelines that the EEOC has adopted to help inform companies what would constitute family responsibility discrimination. I can still put you in, if you call Kathleen after the station after the show, they'll give you my email, and I can put you in touch with the...
I would love that.
Well, actually, I'll just tell you, it's called Work-Life Law. Work-Life Law. They have offices in Washington, D.C., and in Hastings, California.
Huh.
A woman named Joan Williams. She should get in touch with them, because it may be that the behavior they're doing continues, even though it's not after sometime after the birth, that it's continuing a pattern of family responsibility discrimination.
Yeah, it definitely is. She was sharing with me. I mean, she doesn't talk to me very much about this sort of thing, but when I saw her at Christmas, she shared with me that you know, she had done a lot of work on some cases, and all the credit was being given to the men who were...
No, it's appallingly common, I'm so sorry to say, and sometimes appallingly blatant. Joan Williams describes what she calls loose lips, you know, where people will say things as blatant. They wouldn't say, I wouldn't hire you because you're a woman, but they think it's okay to say something pointing at the big pregnant belly of a woman saying, you know, I was going to promote you, but look at you now, can't do it. Or, gee, you've had a baby, so you can't, you're not going to want to travel, so we're not promoting you. I mean, just, you know, taking for granted that it's okay to say these things. And more what we have to do is show you won't be able to do this anymore. But it's going to take a lot of work on our part.
Yeah. And Joyce will give you, I'll put you on, if Rhonda can hear me, I'll just put you on hold and we'll get your email address. We'll get you two in touch in case you need more information, Joyce. Okay, let's pause for a moment and we'll return. Ellen Bravo is our guest this hour. We're talking about, yesterday was International Women's Day. It's okay to celebrate it again today, but actually we're talking about some serious issues in pay gaps between men and women, which persist after all of these years. The World Economic Forum releasing a report yesterday, the timing, of course, to coincide with the 100th anniversary of International Women's Day, showing that women at many of the world's top companies are lagging behind their male peers in the areas of pay, opportunities for professional advancement. One line is open if you'd care to join us. The number is 800-486-8655. Ellen Bravo is our guest this hour, Executive Director of the Family Values at Work Consortium, Adjunct Assistant Professor at the Center for Women's Studies at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, author of Taking on the Big Boys, Why Feminism is Good for Families, Business, and the Nation. And she was director and national director of 9to5 for many years. I'm Kathleen Dunn. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We return to phone calls for Ellen. Let's go to Jeannie from Sun Prairie.
Oh, good morning.
Hi.
I was working in the legislature back in 84. And I've been raising kids for about 30 years now. And when I was pregnant with my 20-year-old, and I went to take my family leave, and an extended one at that, because I had saved up enough vacation time, and it was into the summer, and it was campaign season, so it was an agreed-upon thing with my legislator, a prominent Democrat. He called me up one day, shortly before I was due to come back to work, and said, I think it'd be a good idea if you look for another job, because he wanted to keep on the person that had been filling in for me. So, this issue has been near and dear to my heart for many years. And now with my 15-year-old daughter, you know, I'm trying to influence her generation of women. And I really think that we need to educate the young girls, because, you know, they just don't see it the same way. And I don't think they're being affected, or they don't see that they're being affected by these issues, but they're still ever prominent. And the other thing I wanted to say is that I've experienced through some of my friends how they're getting discriminated against because they have elder folks to take care of now, and they're required to take time off of work, and it doesn't jive with their work schedule, and so they're suffering consequences because of it.
Ellen.
Yeah, I completely agree. And, you know, so on the thing about our daughter, you know, everybody's daughters and sons, because we want boys really have a stake in thinking about things differently. And, you know, I think many of us have raised male children in a different way, and they grow up, too, thinking about my kids are now, you know, early 30s and 29 and 32, and they both... they assume they're going to have families, and their assumption is that means they'll be involved with their families, and they've chosen careers where they can do that. That was always, you know, important to them. So we want to make sure that it's not just girls who think about how am I going to juggle all this, and that girls don't grow up, you know, so engrossed in practicing writing somebody else's last name and misses that they forget about keeping their own sense of self. So, yeah, a lot of things we could do in school. I often tell my students to keep a running letter to their high school social studies teachers to find out why they never learned all the stuff that we talk about much younger. You know, they have no sense of the history of what happened to women. They have no sense of the reality for women in the country today. And they have, you know, no sense of that it's possible to change it. And so making that part of curriculum, making anti-violence and what you should be able to expect from a relationship, learning about, you know, the best ways to raise kids with both parents being involved, all that kind of thing. Yeah, I can't agree more. That would be wonderful. And I appreciate, I'm sorry that you had the experience that you did. And alas, I know people, you know, this very minute who are having the same thing. And we've won some good beginnings, but we have a lot more work to do.
Right. Thanks so much for your call. Mike from Waupaca is next. Hi, Mike.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
See, I just want to make a comment that your guest made some statistic in medicine, and I'm a physician, that something like women get paid 64% of what their male counterparts do, and I really think that distorts the issue. There's no question women should get paid the same as men for the same work, but in my experience, they're not doing the same work. We can scarcely hire a woman physician who wants to do the same work that the man is doing because they have all these restrictions. I can't work after 3 o'clock. I can't take call. I need to be with my family, assuming that the men can do that work. So they elect to not do the same work. Therefore, they make less pay, and that, to me, seems like that's an appropriate lessening of their pay if they are not doing the same work. We have almost 200 physicians in our group, and I'll guarantee you every woman in our group makes the same as a man if they do the same work. So I think it's distorting the issue when we hear those kind of statistics because that's not the reality.
I really appreciate your calling. Let me just say two quick things. These statistics are based on overall year pay for people who work full-time. They're not, generally speaking, it's not so much that two people get hired in the same, office and they are necessarily immediately making less, although even that does happen. But what you just described is such a good indication of what needs to change. I agree with you that men as well as women need more flexibility in their lives. Look at the economy we're in. Look at the state of people's health. For me, it looks obvious that it would be great to have a lot more people providing health care, whether they're doctors or physician's assistants or nurses, et cetera. If we could train and get out a lot more people, particularly in certain areas of the state or, you know, city that are underserved, it would be fabulous. And it would be fabulous if we had more reasonable hours. No doctor should be working these insane, you know, hours that interns do, et cetera. And men as well as women doctors should have the right to have a life outside of work. We could do this if we made it a priority. And so I don't think it's a question of electing. It's not like women choose to give up their dreams. It's that they have caregiving responsibilities. If those responsibilities were shared, and if men as well as women were not punished for saying, I want to have a reasonable work week, that doesn't mean that everybody has to go home at 3. If we also had a better way of having after-school programs or other ways to know that your child was safe and doing well and not, you know, home watching bad TV or drinking,
right,
that would help as well. So it's a combination of things. I'm not calling for let's treat women differently and pay them the same. I'm saying we can redesign work. That will be the only way we can make sure that men and women have the lives they want, the work they love, and that are able to contribute in all the ways that they want to do.
Thanks, Mike. Thanks very much for the call. Madeleine Albright read a poem, a Marge Piercy poem, yesterday. We don't have time for all of it. We only have about 45 seconds, but that was a nice touch. I really like Madeleine Albright.
You know, I have some concerns about some of the policy she had about sanctions on Iraq and not caring that lots of children were being killed in it. But I think she's done a lot. She's done a lot to show a role for women. But this poem in particular was really great. It's called The Low Road by March Piercy. And she talks about what can they do to you, whatever they want, unless you stop them. And then she talks about alone you can fight, you can refuse, but it's much better when you're two people or four people or six people or a dozen or a hundred or a thousand or 100,000. Mm-hmm. And she says, it goes on one at a time. It starts when you care to act. It starts when you do it again after they said no. It starts when you say we and know who you mean, and each day you mean one more.
Ellen, thank you so much. Great to talk to you again.
My pleasure. Take care.
Yeah, you too. Ellen Bravo, now Executive Director of the Family Values at Work Consortium, adjunct assistant professor at the Center for Women's Studies at the University of Wisconsin. She started working at 9 to 5, the National Association of Working Women, in 1982. She helped found the Milwaukee chapter and served until 2004 as the national director of that organization. Very prominent nationally with them. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this program, and thanks to Rhonda Fanning for on-air production here in our Milwaukee studios. We'll be with you again tomorrow at 9 o'clock. This is the Ideas Network.